About 2 years ago, Jessica Stanford decided she wanted to be a life coach. The thought of launching a business, though, was terrifying. So she waited until the stars aligned.
I launched it right at the new moon during Aquarius season, which is really beneficial for big changes. And I waited specifically for that moment.
Because she says after the new moon, the energy is one of new beginnings. For many people, including my friends, astrology provides guidance, something they can consult. That's the case for Maitha El-Hassan.
A lot of astrologers believe that during Mercury retrograde, you should not sign contracts. You should not go into business partnerships and actually hold off on them.
Do you believe that? Will you not sign any financial contracts during Mercury retrograde?
If I had flexibility, I would not.
If you just exist in this world, you know that astrology is having a moment.
Before, it was monthly horoscope signs at the back of magazines. Now we have apps that spit out our birth charts, our compatibility with other people, our daily affirmations.
Astrology is part of a $2.2 billion industry. Between the online columns and subscription services, people are leaning on it to find meaning and to make some money. My friend Sada Ahmed, who's been into astrology since elementary school, is turning her love for it into a side hustle. When does your business officially launch?
I am hoping to launch it this week.
Ah, that's so exciting.
Yeah.
She's providing birth chart readings and is calling the business Chi-strology.
The sort of tagline is, let me spill the chai.
So I'm personally not huge into astrology, but I totally get why some of my friends are. It's kind of like a spiritual practice. Sure, it can help advise you about financial decisions or whatever, but it really comes down to understanding your birth chart, what the sky looked like the exact moment you were born. Because astrology, it assigns meaning to the placement of the planets and moon and sun, which people use to explore themselves.
I don't think it's one of those things that's set in stone and tells you who you are. I think it gives you a place to start. So kind of like a Rorschach test, the way I interpret my chart is saying a lot about me, and it helps me become more self-reflective.
But I don't know. Sometimes it can also just be fun. How about Beyonce? What is she?
Beyonce is a Virgo, and Jay-Z is a Sag. Sometimes I think maybe I have a photographic memory, but it's wasted. Like, it's only on astrology.
I'm Rima Mehrez, and welcome to This Is Uncomfortable, a show for Marketplace about life and how money messes with it. More and more people are turning to astrology to help better understand themselves. So this week, I talk with one of the top astrologers out there, Chani Nicholas, because who better to help answer questions about money and work than someone very much in touch with the universe? Together, we tackle listener questions and chat about the booming business that is astrology and what it's like to have your wife as a business partner. Chani Nicholas is someone who's built a huge online following writing original horoscopes, making monthly zodiac playlists for Spotify, and earlier this year, she released her first book, You Were Born for This, a kind of workbook that helps you understand your own birth chart. But if you ask Chani to describe herself, she most definitely will not share all of that with you. When you introduce yourself to people who may not have heard of you, you're at a dinner party. How do you introduce yourself?
I usually try by getting away by saying I'm a writer. And if that doesn't work, then I'll usually say I have an online business. And if that doesn't work, then I'll say I'm an astrologer. Depending on how much energy I have and how much I want to deal with unknown feedback about my profession and comments that are unsolicited.
Can I ask, is there an outlandish comment that comes to mind?
Yeah, I mean, generally anything about stealing people's money.
Okay, great.
Yeah, and being a, you know, an unethical person.
People will actually say that to you?
Yeah. Some family members even. It's the thing about money. Like, people are like, you take people's money. You tell people what to do and take people's money. And I'm like, no, that's not what I do. I actually teach astrology mostly. I try to make it really clear to most people that I don't ever tell anybody what to do or who they are. We just explore different things about the person's chart and about the things that they're going through. Right. And my main thing, and I get this from my teacher, is to say, does that resonate for you? So it's really about you having your own power and you utilizing the information and the tools as you need to. And I'm here to be the bridge to between you and the tool of astrology, if you want. And if you don't, great. I hope you go find what works for you.
Yeah. So you're an entrepreneur for a practice. It's so interesting to me. For a practice that's essentially been around for hundreds of years.
Thousands of years. Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, humans depend on what happens in the sky. We need the sun to rise and fall. And we need to know what season it's in. We're in. And so humans have always been connected to what goes on in the heavens. And you might say that that's astrological in nature because we've also, because of that, made meaning out of what it means if a certain constellation rises every spring equinox. Humans made myth and made meaning out of that constellation because it was part of a life-giving moment. You cannot extricate astrology from human culture. And you can't extricate it from religion either. Any of the world religions have some astronomical event tied to them. Judaism, Hinduism, Buddhism do celebrate things around the new and full moons.
Yeah. It's in the religion I grew up in, like Islam. It's all about the lunar calendar.
Yeah.
So I feel like we're in this moment where, you know, everyone's obsessed with astrology online. The
For
memes.
For better and worse.
Right. The memes that the counts. It's a lot.
Yeah. It's too much.
You think it's too much?
It's sometimes I'm like, this is all going to go really bad.
Oh, why do you say that?
Because anything that feels that saturated feels like, what's the point even? Mm. Everyone's in the same thing. Everyone's in the same soup. And now it just means nothing, which is part of why I wrote the book.
To make it more nuanced.
Yeah, a little. And just to say also, astrology is not primarily about signs. It's actually about planets in the sky.
Right. And in what ways do you feel like this obsession with astrology right now reflects, if at all, what's going on in our world today?
It does, I think, speak to the fact that we are in a moment of huge kind of breaking open of culture. The ways in which we functioned within this kind of capitalism, within this kind of consumerism, within this kind of patriarchy, all the things, is causing incredible anguish, not only to people and communities, but also to the actual earth. You can't look at your Twitter feed without knowing that we're in a moment of like incredible danger, potential, opportunity, grief. And we need things to help us hold that. So if you have religious practice, spiritual practice, if you have philosophical practice, if you have a practice with nature, if your practice is astrology, I think we need something to help us hold this experience of being flooded with information that's bigger than we are.
That's real. Yeah. And so now you're in this place in your life. You have a full-time job, as an astrologer.
I have 17 jobs. Yes, they're all full-time.
You have multiple full-time jobs.
All under the umbrella of astrology, but yes, many of them.
Yeah. And you work really closely with your wife, right? Like she edits all of your horoscopes.
My wife does edit my horoscopes. Sonia Passi is an incredible editor, but she also helps me run the business. So every major business decision that is made with her. And every great idea is usually hers. So she actually structured the book. She was the one who was like, this is the way in which people will actually understand what you're trying to tell them.
That's amazing.
I just wrote a version of the book that was like, here's everything I know about astrology, blah. And then she was like,
no, honey.
No, that doesn't work.
I can't imagine what it's like to have a romantic partner and a business partner be the same person. I'd love to hear a little bit more about what that actually looks like for you.
It looks like a really successful partnership, to be honest. When we first got together, there was a moment where it was like late at night. She was editing my horoscopes and I was like taking her edits and redoing them. And we had to get them out as soon as possible. And I just remember having this, looking over at her and just having this feeling of, wow, she works as hard, maybe harder than I do. And so it's meeting those people. They obviously don't have to be a romantic partnership, but meeting those partnerships in whatever facet of your life you need them, where the people are in the same zone as you.
Totally.
And also able to keep pushing even past that or growing or opening or however you want to say it. And so her skill set is very broad and very impressive. She's kind of disgusting in that way. She's so talented. It's really ridiculous. But all of her assets and talents fit perfectly with mine. Mm.
Do you ever feel like the lines get blurred working with her when you're like, okay, this is like professional and this is personal? Or does it feel like just a working relationship that...
There are things like we can... We're comfortable fighting out something, but then we're like, oh, I think that probably we shouldn't do that in front of other people. So we have to learn how to speak to each other in a way that's professional, completely professional. Like we have to learn how to talk to each other in the same way we would talk to everybody else that we're working with and not let it get too casual between us.
I see.
So whereas if it's just her and I talking about a business thing and we need to go a little head to head, because sometimes we do. We have to be like, I don't think so. And she'll be like, well, I do. And when we have our business voices on, we tend to get a little bit more intense. And so there's always interesting relationship dynamics to work out. But 99% of the time, it's just she is like a godsend. If it's important, it needs to be run by her, and everybody knows that. Mm-hmm. And so I'm the creator, I'm the creative, you know, part of the team, but she's the mastermind behind everything.
I love how highly you talk about your wife. It's really beautiful. It really is.
She's an incredible person.
Yeah. Coming up after the break, we tackle listener questions about spending too much money on things we do not need. And why everyone is so obsessed with productivity.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
Okay, so we collected some of our listener questions for you to answer.
Let's do it.
Yeah, so people wrote in asking us questions related to money and work, and we're going to go through them and just try our best to give advice, or I'll just hear you try to give advice. All right, so our first question is from Emily.
Hi, I'm Emily, and I have a question about productivity and rest. I find myself having difficulty balancing between the two. Do you think it's possible to view rest as productivity? And how can someone change their mindset and find balance between the two? I think it's something a lot of freelancers and small business owners like myself face all the time, which is guilt for relaxing or resting or taking a nap or even just plain not doing anything at all. Thank you.
Oof, I feel that so hard.
I'm sure.
Yes, rest is incredibly productive. We try to get to bed as early as possible.
Really? Honestly. How early?
Like last night we were in bed at 9 o'clock.
Love it.
And I slept until 7. My wife woke up at 5. But I could have kept sleeping. And I will oftentimes, if I'm starting to feel that exhaustion come, I will work laying down. Because if you're laying down, your adrenals have a better ability to recharge. Although probably not if you're laying down and working necessarily. But definitely laying down is really important.
Yeah.
It is how your adrenals recharge and refill. But I have to say that, like, some days I wake up and I am just exhausted and I can't produce the thing that's on my calendar that I'm supposed to produce. And so I've got to switch it up and do something else.
Mm. Do you ever feel guilt over that?
All the time.
How do you overcome that guilt?
I don't know if I do.
Yeah.
I don't know. When you are an entrepreneur, making money, it's all on you.
Totally.
You don't do the work, it doesn't get done. And then also you have to learn when and where to let go.
Mm.
And trust that the next wave of energy will come. My wife and I both have gotten much, much better at being like, it's not coming today and I'm just going to shut it down. Mm. Instead of wasting my energy, like kind of working, I'm just going to not.
Totally. When I read this question, the first thing that came to mind was just how much we tend to glorify productivity.
So much.
Right? Like, we praise people and applaud people who are overworked, who make sacrifices. You're constantly faced with that message. And so how do you balance the fact that, like, yeah, you want ambition, you want to be productive, and but also, like, you need to live your life, you know?
Yeah, there's a cost to it.
Yeah.
Everything has a cost. And it's all about which bill you want to pay. So if you have huge ambitions, but you really want to spend more time with family and friends, then the cost is not getting as much work done. And that can be totally okay for you. If it's not okay for you, then the opposite has to be true in a way. I think it's also really good, and again, this is a totally privileged thing to say, but when you travel or enter into cultures that are not so focused on the American dream and the American idealism of accomplishment, and you go to places where it's really about connecting with each other, having no devices out, no one's allowed to work.
Love that,
you know,
scenario.
And where it's like people are really deeply connecting with each other, that can be enough to kind of rewire your brain to be like, wait, this is actually also life. It's, you know, maybe I need to have more balance in these ways.
Yeah, I like that. All right, let's move on to the next question. It comes from Sarah.
Okay, so here's my problem. I like buying things too much, like clothes, concert tickets, miscellaneous things at Target. I just get really happy when I go shopping with money that I really shouldn't be spending. I know that some people use shopping as a coping mechanism, but I just find so much happiness when I actually own something. How do I stop finding so much joy in owning stuff?
What's coming to mind?
This is so funny. I'm like, what do you have in Taurus? Where's your Venus? Well, my first question is it joy if you're buying things that you don't have money for? Because is that really joy? So that's, I'd actually want to have the conversation. Like,
that's
what is joy? What's the actual feeling? Because I know that there's, you know, there's many studies on dopamine.
Right.
And the release of dopamine that happens right before we know we're going to do a thing. Mm-hmm. It's the same dopamine that gets released right before an addict takes a drink or does a shot, whatever. It's the expectation of it. So one of my questions would be, is it joy? Is it a rush that you get? Is there guilt attached if you don't have money? Is there panic? Is there fear? There sounds like there's a lack of control, and that the thing that happens to you when you're spending money is actually maybe something that that's bigger than you.
Wow.
And so I also want to know where else we can find that in your life, because it does sound like it's about luxury and beauty and having things that you love. And so I also know that some of us can find that in nature, and some of us can find that in relationship also, and some of us can find that in meditation. Like, if you see something that you really want it, what happens if you wait 24 hours to buy it? Can you? And if you can't, then there's something compulsive in there,
right,
that I just want to like go into and play. Like, let's go right there and then unpack that. It's serving an emotional need. And so what is that emotional need? What's there? Is it loneliness, anxiety?
You sound like a therapist.
Yeah.
It reminds me of what my roommate used to say. Whenever she was like going through bouts of sadness, she'd be like, oh, you can always tell how I feel based on how many boxes are outside our door.
That's right. For me, it's like ice cream containers.
Right. So basically, she needs to dig deeper.
I would say so. But who am I? I don't know her. She doesn't know me. She doesn't have to listen to me. What do I know?
Okay. So let's try to help someone else. I'm just over here nodding my head enthusiastically. All right, so I'm going to read the next question. One of our listeners wrote in and said, I have a boss who is distrustful and makes my day-to-day feel toxic. I know I'm planning on quitting in 6 months, though. How can I make the day-to-day of my job better and reframe the next 6 months so I am not dreading them? So she knows she's going to leave. I'm curious what advice you'd give her, because it's really, her question is like, I know I'm going to approach a toxic environment. How do I do it in the most positive way and still maintain my sanity?
Yeah. And I just want to say, like, I don't know if there's a way to totally protect one. I don't want anyone to feel like they're failing if they can't, quote unquote, protect themselves from a toxic environment. Mm-hmm. The thing about toxicity is poison is, if you touch it, you have some of it. Anyone to feel like, well, if you meditated enough, you wouldn't have these problems, because I don't think that's true. Yeah. Toxicity is toxicity. You have to also have a way of cleansing it out of your system once you've left. And reminding yourself that you're in a toxic environment can sometimes be enough of a little bit of a perspective, which can feel a little bit like a protection, because you're like, this isn't right. Yeah. This is abusive. Mm-hmm. And I think to name things like that, not to pigeonhole someone, but that behavior is abusive, right, or that behavior is manipulative. But once you leave, I think it's really important to like cleanse your system. And so for some people, again, that'll be a walk outside or a bath, or I would have a ritual of like, okay, I've left, I'm taking all that off, I'm making a distinguishment for between that space and my inner space or my home life space or my social life space, and I'm marking that moment. But if there's a prayer or a affirmation that you can repeat to yourself all day, every day, that can be something that can be helpful. Maybe if you let, I don't know what the situation is, but
right,
if there's opportunity to leave before that, then also that would also be good.
Yeah. But it is nice that she has a deadline or an expiration date.
It's great. So I would prep before I go into work to have something to remind you who you are and that you're going into a situation where you have to have a certain amount of armor up, and that throughout that you're giving yourself some love and affirmation and some energy. And then after that, making a distinguishing mark, like I'm leaving that and I'm leaving it behind.
Wow, that's really great. When I was thinking of answers for this question, I was like, lean in on the positive things, talk to your coworkers more. I don't know.
That too.
All right, we have one more question for you. Here it is.
I'm in a career that doesn't bring me a lot of joy, and I want to transition out of it and into something else, but I don't know exactly what. I wonder if I should just quit, live off what little savings I have, just to force myself to figure out the next thing. Or should I just keep this job, try some hobbies, and see what sticks? Or is there a third option I'm not seeing? Thanks.
Does she know what she wants to do?
It does not sound like she knows what she wants to do.
It doesn't sound like it.
Yeah.
I sympathize with you. It's a hard place to be in, especially if you have the comfort. And it's not a question I don't think that anybody can answer for you, because only you know what it means to you to be financially insecure. To give up your job is to be financially insecure.
Yeah.
Some people are cool with that. Some people are not. Are you a person that likes to take those kinds of risks? Are you someone that's okay, you know, living on rice and beans or what have you? And so you really need to know what works best for you. For me, it's good for me to kind of push myself off the edge, off the cliff and dive.
Right.
So that's where I thrive. So understand where you thrive. What are the conditions that you thrive within? And then build those out for yourself.
But I think like what also stuck out to me here is she's having a hard time figuring out what she's actually passionate about.
That's it.
Yeah.
And you don't have to make the decision all at once. If you're not in a toxic environment, if the thing pays your bills, my thinking goes like, then work after hours on the thing that you want to do. Work weekends. Or like maybe you need to go on a retreat somewhere for like 3 weeks and go sit and think about it. Or maybe you need to do a business development workshop. Or there's a million different ways to start to get your creative juices flowing.
Yeah.
And you can't rely on being inspired. You really have to rely on practice and showing up to the drawing board day after day after day.
Right. It's not something that just like lives quietly within us that's waiting to come out, which
it's
is
like
definitely how I've thought about it.
24/7. That doesn't happen. But you have to know like what it is that you're like, I need to pursue this or I will not be satisfied.
That's great. Yeah, I think those are all of our questions.
Great.
And you answer them beautifully.
Great.
I really enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you. If you want more of Chani Nicholas, check out her book, You Were Born for This. All right, that's all for this week's episode. If you haven't already signed up for our newsletter, why haven't you? You can do that at marketplace.org/newsletters.
This Is Uncomfortable is me, Rima Khres, Megan Dietry, Haley Hirschman, Peter Balanon-Rosen, and Daisy Palacios. Our intern is Daniel Martinez. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. Charlton Thorpe is our senior technical director. Satara Nieves is the executive director of On Demand. And Deb Clark is the senior vice president and general manager of Marketplace. And our theme music is by Wonderly. All right, catch y'all next week. Early bird or night owl?
Early bird.
Iced coffee or hot coffee?
Neither.
Ooh, tea?
Tea.
Me too. Stay in on a Saturday night or go out?
Stay in.
Same. Do you pour the cereal or the milk first?
Cereal.
Okay.
What kind of monster are you?
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.